It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And indeed, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard Skinner, along with Chad Brendel and Rick Roaring. Jeff Drummond, who covers Kentucky, will join us here in just a little bit on the podcast, as we are now officially neck-deep into college basketball season, with just about every team in the country beginning action on Friday night and playing some games over the weekend. And that will lead me to point number one today, boys. I know this gets brought up a lot. Are we starting too early?
No. When do you want us to start?
I don't know. I mean, it was going to lead into a bigger question of, do we start college basketball in mid-December after the first semester's over and go a little later?
No.
I think it gets lost in the shuffle this time of year. I really do.
It does, but here's
it's going to get lost in the shuffle then, too.
Yeah, like people just, like, the fact of the matter is, it's there's certain parts of the country where college basketball just isn't going to be popular during certain parts of the year.
Well, major cities. I mean, and that's a fact. Yeah.
Right. And that's going to happen when it gets to baseball season, then. There's going to be some people that lose interest.
I don't think people get as geeked. They get geeked up for an opening day, but not for the very start of the season. They just really don't.
But, I mean, the NFL goes into February.
I know it does.
So it's going to get overshadowed any way you do it, any way you slice it. I just don't think it, you know, I don't think moving it back changes anything.
Yeah, I think this is like people who like an indie band or a TV show that's not real popular, and they keep telling, like, I don't care if other people are paying attention to college basketball. I will be when it starts today. This is one of my favorite days of the year. I'm happy.
But should colleges, though, be?
Well, here's what
Xavier will put 10,000 people in the stands tonight, so they'll be paying attention. Their fans will be paying attention. I don't think they'll care.
Here's what you would lose if you did that, Skinny. You would lose Thanksgiving, a week of college basketball starting at noon, ending at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, that's one of my favorite portions of the season.
The 24-hour
tip-off, the Thanksgiving tournaments.
I enjoy some of it, too, but I'll be honest with you. If you gave me a choice, and this is terrible because I'm not a huge, even though I cover the NFL more than probably any other sport, and I'm not a big fan of the product, to be honest with you. If you gave me a choice, though, on Thanksgiving Day of watching NFL from noon until I go comatose.
Well, they don't play on Thanksgiving Day, but it's the whole week. College basketball. There's tournaments.
I mean, Xavier's played in it most years.
Most of them are done by Wednesday or whatever.
See, I'm the opposite. I love Thanksgiving for college basketball. I always watch college basketball on Thanksgiving.
I would watch college basketball over the NFL.
Every time.
I know you would, but the general populace doesn't.
Well, yeah, and that's fine. And I don't care. And I don't think a lot of teams do.
And you don't have to, and you don't have to. But colleges, to some degree, better start having to.
I mean, the only people that really have to worry about that is the SEC, other than UK.
Well, they have to worry about it until you get to mid-February, probably. And after signing day, after football signing day.
Exactly.
All right. The other question, though, is why start on Friday nights? Is it to stay away from college football Saturdays? Why are we starting on Friday nights all of a sudden?
Well, yeah, we had this conversation, which I don't know, because, like, the rest of the year it doesn't matter to them that they're not playing.
Right.
So
I know.
I really don't know why it seems important for them to start on Friday.
It's not like it's one or two or 10 or 15 teams. It's the vast majority.
Yeah, pretty much everybody plays.
Really, there's only 2 weeks left in the football season after this week.
Yeah.
So that only gives you two Saturdays where things overlap. So I can see they buy themselves a week, basically, by starting tonight instead of tomorrow.
I'm thinking for a lot of them, it's just that first week of the season when you're getting back in the flow. You don't want to be running two events on campus on the same day.
Yeah, for a lot of the bigger schools, there is a potential of a home football game. Not always, but there's a potential. And for all the bigger schools, there is a very good potential you're playing a home bye game, for lack of a better term, in basketball. So there is the potential for half the teams in the country be playing two events on that weekend.
But what you see is generally done in those situations is play the basketball game on Sunday. I can't remember them having, I think one time I can remember a football game and a basketball game on the same day. It's about 4 or 5 years ago. But most of the time they schedule those games on Sunday.
Yeah, and it just in this marketplace, I guess, especially because it is a big high school football marketplace. You got a lot of high school football playoff action going on. You obviously have the weekend coming up for college football. It strikes some people as having to make a tough choice on a Friday night.
Yeah.
If you've got a high school that your kid goes to and maybe plays for, and a school that you root for to decide whether or not to go to that game. Well, Miami's getting away. They're going to play a 1 o'clock game on Friday. Probably by the time this podcast is up, they will have already played. And hopefully, for John Cooper's sake, would have beaten Muskingum.
Yes, hopefully. On that front, we had this conversation on our podcast this past week, the Dana Victory Podcast and Musketeer Report, and it's a good question for you and you. The
worst podcast you've ever done?
Yeah, exactly. The Crosstown Shootout, do you prefer it? We were talking about the fact this year it's much later. It's in the middle of conference play, I think, January 20-something. Do you prefer that, or do you like it early in the year, early December?
I kind of like it at the end. I just think both teams are... One, I think it's, in terms of NCAA tournament positioning, I think it's a huge boost for both teams to have that game late in the year. Because both teams are generally going to be high in the RPI. It's going to be a chance to, one way or the other, you're going to pick up some steam. You're going to get a bump one way or the other.
But through the grind of conference, sticking another game in there in the grind of conference?
That's the hard part, but UC plays in the AAC now, so it doesn't really matter.
the grind isn't as much.
Right.
I was just going to say, that was Dan's point for Xavier, is that he thinks it can cost them. Like 2 years ago, they lost to St. John's after the Crosstown Shootout, and St. John's wasn't very good. But Dom Pointer dominated Xavier in that game.
I wish it would come in the December range, and the reason I would say that is because it gives you something to focus on to some degree in non-conference. I mean, let's face it, Xavier's non-conference schedule is pretty good, but a lot of non-conference schedules, you have 3 to 5 maybe maximum games where you really have to go full effort. Yeah. You focus on, fans focus on. I think this gives you a chance to make that a focal point of non-conference before you jump into conference.
So you and I are both hypocrites because – now you're saying, you know, you were just saying before that they should start the season later because no one's going to be paying attention.
December. I didn't say December 1st.
Well, I'm just saying, my reasoning is the same. I like when they play it later in the year because I do think that people are a little more hyped up. They know what's going on. It's not college football season anymore. And so that's part of the reason I like it later in the year, which, yeah, I'm a total hypocrite.
And let Dan know that it's not UC's decision to play it at that time of the year. ESPN's decision to play it at that time of the year, just like it's Fox's decision to play it when they play it when the game is at Xavier. The two schools don't really have any say in that. You see, ESPN wants the game on rivalry week, so that's when the game is. They pay the bills.
I'll be sure to let Dan know.
Now, back to your point, though, you don't think that in a rivalry like this, when they played earlier, that fans wouldn't be geeked up and focused on it?
They are, for sure, but there is. I do think there's a little more of the whole city cares when it's late in the year versus when it's early in the year. It seems like it gets lost in the shuffle just a little bit. Like, when the Bengals are still going on, basically, it gets lost in the shuffle a little bit because all the media in this town have so many commitments.
Right.
I mean, on the local radio station, there's 14 Bengals show every week.
No doubt.
So that's still going to be going on if you play it that early in the year.
Yeah, perfect example. Lance wanted to have us on this week, and he had 1 hour.
Yeah, it was non-Bengals.
A Bengals show,
right. Hot Stove League.
Right. He had 1 hour where he could get us in the entire week.
Wow. Well, it is a good question. And obviously this year it is going to be played later, and we'll see how it goes. But this is the middle of conference crime. As a coach, I wouldn't want to have to deal with a rival in the middle of conference crime. Unless your rival's in the conference.
ECU, Xavier, Tulsa. I think it'll be all right.
Villanova. A little different, but all right. A couple of quick notes. It is the night when just about everybody's going to start. We're going to touch on Xavier's opener, UC's opener. We're going to talk with Jeff Drummond here in just a minute. Talk about UK. They open up with Stephen F. Austin. Also opening this weekend, at least somewhat locally, is Miami, as I mentioned, plays Muskingum. Ohio State is at Navy at 9 o'clock tonight. Big game, IU at Kansas at 9 o'clock tonight, or IU against Kansas at 9 o'clock tonight. NKU hosting Earlham, and then on Sunday they play at Illinois. For a lot of the schools in the area this weekend, I mean, it's a pretty quick turnaround for most. Xavier's playing tonight and Monday. UC's playing tonight and Monday. Yeah. Kentucky's playing tonight and Sunday. NKU's playing tonight and Sunday. So a lot of quick turnarounds for teams right off the bat.
I would say that's particularly tough on NKU until you realize they're playing a Division III team to open their season. They're going to beat like 70. So.
And then a pseudo Division I team on Sunday.
Well, that's mean. That's mean. You're right, though. Illinois is bad.
It is true. All right, we'll bring in Jeff Drummond here in just a moment. Talk about Kentucky's opener with Stephen F. Austin and some high expectations, as always, for the Wildcats. We'll talk with Chad and Rick as we continue as well. We'll talk about the UC's game tonight against Brown, Monday against Albany, and Xavier against Lehigh and Buffalo, and also the recruiting classes for both that were signed this week as we roll along right here on the podcast.
All right, time now to welcome in Jeff Drummond from Scout.com, who covers the University of Kentucky Wildcats, and they open this evening against Stephen F. Austin, then play Sunday against Canisius. Jeff, it was an interesting exhibition season. Obviously, Kentucky played two overmatched opponents, but it does look like a team that's going to be able to score the basketball.
Yeah, it really does. It was hard to tell a great deal about, you know, what their bigs and the front court are really going to look like, but with the back court, all kinds of speed, all kinds of scoring ability, and you've got to, if you're a UK fan, you've got to really like that three-headed monster in the backcourt with De'Aaron Fox, Isaiah Briscoe, and Malik Monk.
This roster, obviously, as most, has had turnover and obviously has a lot of young talent. Can you compare this group to any of the previous young groups that have come through for Cal?
You know, I've got that question quite a bit, and it's really hard for me to compare them to a group, but I do see some individual comparisons in some of the guys, especially with De'Aaron Fox, who reminds me an awful lot of a young John Wall, with just how quick he is, 94 feet from one part of the court to the other, and the way he finishes around the basket.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jeff. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox, a guy we saw a lot on the recruiting trail. His elite speed from end line to end line is just ridiculous. I think he's actually even a better defender than John Wall was at the same age. You mentioned that post rotation. I'm interested to hear, you've got Willis and Bam starting at the 4 and 5. How do you expect that post rotation to kind of play out after, you know, once we get past that first substitution?
Yeah, it should be really interesting to see how that shakes down. I'm impressed by Isaac Humphrey's body right now and kind of the transformation that's taken on. He's able to get out, move his feet a little bit better and help them defensively more so than at times last year. So I think he has to figure into the mix to some capacity. And then, you know, even though we didn't see exhibition opponents that really had big people to test UK's bigs, I think there's a spot for Ty Winyard maybe down the road, too, with his physicality. I mean, if you run into foul trouble or, you know, run into an injury situation, something along that line, he's a big physical guy that you can envision going in and at the very least giving you a few minutes of some good defense and toughness on the boards.
Jeff, it looked like watching the exhibition games that Isaiah Briscoe has kind of figured out the shooting woes that he went through last year. And is there anything that points to why things went so south for him, especially at the free throw line where, I mean, we remember him in AAU. He was a 70-75% free throw shooter.
And less than 50%
yeah,
last year.
And he couldn't connect at all last year.
That's one of the biggest mysteries to me, and I even point back to something I either wrote or said at the time after watching him in AAU. I told people, you know, he's going to score a ton of points going to the basket, and even when he doesn't put the ball in the hole, he's going to get to the free throw line and score a lot. So that it was just staggering to me to watch him go through whatever that was he experienced. I think it was almost all mental, because he's clearly got a pretty good you know, solid shot, especially at the free throw line. And if he could hit 70% like he did in these two exhibition games, that bodes really well for his season.
Jeff, last year Kentucky gave up the most points in a season in John Calipari's era. Obviously, they got rim protectors. Is this a group that can guard?
Yeah, I believe it is. I think they'll be really good eventually. They're nowhere near that right now, and he readily admits that when you talk to him. He thinks they'll probably be a strong or dominant defensive team in the second half of the season. I think it may take until, you know, January, February before we see that, but the raw pieces are there to block a ton of shots. A guy like Sasha Kalia Jones, who, you know, we really didn't talk a lot about, he was a little bit the kind of the forgotten guy in this recruiting class compared to the other guys. I think he's going to be really good defensively.
I know Derek Willis even talked about how he wants to be a factor on the defensive end. Now, want to and ability are obviously two different things, but it sounds like he wants to try to set some level of tone, which is probably a good sign.
Yeah, it is. Everything you hear about him right now seems to be grounded in improved maturity. I think maybe that incident over the summer may have been a little bit of a shock to the system, and it seems to be leading him in the right direction now that he's kind of gotten maybe a second chance from Cal on that, and wants to be a better player, putting in the time and the effort on both ends of the floor.
Jeff, as Kentucky progresses through the non-conference, there are a couple of difficult games on there, not a ton, but just enough. From John Calipari's perspective, what does he want to accomplish by the time this team begins conference play and starts to wind its way towards March?
Well, I think with him, it's always about kind of testing yourself against good people. It is a real challenging non-conference schedule again. Figuring out who he can rely on in the rotation, if it's going to be a typical Cal rotation of seven or eight guys, or maybe if he could stretch it out to, you know, 9, 10 or more. I'm a little skeptical if it gets to that, but, you know, through what we've seen so far, he may have two groups of players. I don't know if it would be a platoon situation again, like we saw with that great 2015 team, but getting that rotation down, figuring out who he can rely on in a tough spot in some of these games, you know, against the big name opponents, which guys aren't going to wilt under pressure when they need somebody to make a big play.
All right, Jeff. So they start the season against Stephen F. Austin. Obviously, fans are going to be thinking about that, the team that knocked off West Virginia, lost on a tip into Notre Dame in that memorable NCAA game. But there's no more Thomas Walkup, obviously. Cats by 90 or more, or what do you say?
I'd be a little surprised if it went like that. But, you know, that first – I anticipate a little bit of a challenging first half for them simply because those exhibition games came so easy and they really didn't get much of a test. But at some point, middle of the first half or halftime beyond, I think they'll hit their stride and win pretty comfortably.
Jeff, can I remind you that the Stephen F. Austin team just tied North Texas 64-64 in overtime in a scrimmage recently?
It's probably a good time for that, but it'll be interesting. It won't do anything to diminish the hype if they go out and really roll this team in the first game.
How many times are we going to hear, bam?
Quite a bit.
it's such an easy thing for the PA announcer. It really is. It's the easiest one for him to drop in of all time.
I think they just want to put a button over there where they can hit it. And what I've asked for, I'd like to see on the scoreboard the old Batman TV series graphics.
The BAM.
The BAM pop. Yeah, yeah, I like that. That's have you suggested that?
That's my call. I think it'd go over big.
I'd like a nice reggaeton air horn, too, every time he dunks, just going off in the stadium. I think that'd be good.
That'll be up to a student to do that.
Yeah, probably.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate the time very much. Thanks, and we look forward to chatting with you as the season progresses.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care. That's Jeff Drummond from Scout.com, who covers the University of Kentucky football and basketball teams.
Bam.
For them as well. Yeah. That would be like the easy button. Or the what's the one that makes the ba-ba-bow, ba-bow? Have that go up.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I like that one. I like that
exactly.
One.
Exactly.
All right, fellas, let's look ahead to the two teams you guys cover. First, UC, which opens with Brown tonight and then plays Albany on Monday. What can you tell us about Brown, Chad Brendel, and what problems, if any, will they cause the UC Bearcats?
They returned four of their five starters from a season ago. Pretty solid little point guard. The guy that they lost was their leading scorer and rebounder, so they've got a void to replace there. But really good little point guard. Got some good speed. They can push the tempo a little bit, and they shoot it pretty well. They're one of those teams that if you catch them on the right night, they can hit 10, 12 three-pointers and hang around in the game. Say, Rick actually did scout on them last night watching the Brown video on Synergy. So
yeah, like you said, Tavon Blackman, their point guard, is tough. He's not a superior athlete, but he's one of those guys, kind of like he's not this good. He's like a really poor man's Tu Holloway. If you remember how Tu got his points, jerking his head back, drawing fouls, getting in the lane, being shifty. There's times where they'll just set a high ball screen for him above the three-point line, and then there's another one at the free throw line. Like, he'll just weave around two different ball screens and try to make a play. They really rely on him for their offense. And then they've got a 6'6 forward.
Steve, a guy that's going to be worn out in about 15 minutes.
No. He goes all game. I mean, he has got a big heart. Big-time ticker in that guy. The little guy with the big ticker is...
No, that's a shooter.
Yeah, that's Steven Spieth, the 6'6 shooter. He's scrappy.
Who is Jordan Spieth's little brother?
And he can really shoot it from the outside, and he actually uses his body. He's an underrated, like, in-transition driver type of guy where he doesn't go with any deceptive athleticism.
Is he a 5 handicap?
that's a great new euphemism.
5 handicap, I like it.
I just don't know. How much might we see Jacob Evans tonight? How many minutes? Would it be, maybe?
I mean, I would...
Full go or limited?
I would think probably medium go. I don't think you're going to... You know, he just came back to practice on Monday. They had Tuesday off for the election, and then Wednesday and Thursday. So he's only had 3 days of practice in the past basically month. I would say probably 15, 20 minutes, I would think, would be good for him.
From a scoring perspective, I know this comes up every single year. Will UC be able to score enough? What will tonight show us either way with this team?
I mean, I think that's hard to tell because you're not going to have Jacob Evans for 35 minutes, I don't think.
And more importantly, because Brown is god-awful defensively. The thing they'll do is they'll play fast. They want to get up and down the court, so they're going to kind of try to make UC run and gun. So we will get a feel for if Mick's comfortable doing that with this team. But like you said, last year we saw them score a bunch of points in the first couple games as well, and then they kind of transitioned back as they got against tougher competition.
No, what happened is they gave up 83 to Iowa State and 79 to Butler or whatever it was, and Mick said, okay, I tried to let you run and gun, and you stop playing defense.
No, and there's some truth to that for coaches. I mean, you know, you tell players before the season starts, we want to play this way as long as you do this and this. Yeah. If you don't do those things, you're going to play it my way then. We're going to go back to grinding you out, and I'm sorry I gave you an opportunity to guard in a fast-paced environment. You didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, he had to reel it back in. He reeled it back in. So it's a different offensive team, though, I think, with Kyle Washington in there and instead of Octavius Ellis and Jacob Evans progressing, and I just think it's a different offensive team.
I think this is a game where you want to see Gary Clark and Kyle Washington. The bigs haven't been great, I don't think, through the preseason. This is a game you want to see them dominate because there's no returning post presence for this Brown team whatsoever. They're going to be relying on freshmen. You want to see UC's upperclassmen take it to them in the post. I think that's a big key.
I certainly agree. And Kyle has struggled mightily. So they need to get him on track and get some positive thoughts in his head.
Right, and get some confidence.
What do you expect? Brown's a team only played 12% zone last year. It's not what they go to, but against some of the better teams they faced, they threw out for possessions. They'll go like 5 straight possessions and they'll go away from it, but then they'll go back to it. If they do go to that zone, how do you expect UC's offense to look? Are they comfortable with that?
They've been doing a lot of zone offense this week. You know, we talked about this the other day off the air. You know, it's funny, coaches get to that point where they're going through the preseason and they're working on everything they need to work on, and then they get 3 or 4 days out from the game and they go, damn.
We can do this.
Zone! They might zone us!
We got to remember that we're playing a team that's far inferior to us, and they're probably going to zone us. I think they should be okay with it. You know, it's just going to be one of those, how do they shoot it, you know, against the zone? You know, how do they work the zone?
And then chase down misses.
Yeah, chase down misses. They weren't very good on the glass against Bellarmine. Well,
the good news is Brown had enough size and athleticism to get 7 Ivy League wins in the last 2 seasons. So
that's solid.
So I think UC will be all right.
Columbia's probably 2 of those.
So in terms of what Brown can do for you, not much.
Not a whole lot.
No.
He can
get you confidence. That's what he can
get you confidence. Well, and they need it because life comes at you real fast. For them, 1 week from today, they play Rhode Island. And
we touched on that on Monday about how tough that game might be.
It's going to be really tough.
No doubt about it. All right, we'll talk about that a little bit more next week. But let's go on to Xavier, which opens with Lehigh tonight. Before we get to that, obviously, let's touch on the Miles Davis thing for just a moment. His legal problems are behind him. He's not going to play tonight, obviously, but is there a chance now that this is behind him, kind of semi-cleared up, that he returns, or is it still very much up in the air, Rick?
No, he's going to return, but I don't think this, like, accelerates the timeline of what I've been saying all along, which is end of the first semester. But the legal stuff has kind of been a formality all along. I mean, that's not
it's
to
not,
it's not to make
it's not major, man. I'm not making light of it. It's not major stuff here.
Right, it's not to make light of the situation, right. But the worst-case scenario was, like, diversion of probation, and right. He didn't get probate. I mean, like, he got less than that. Right. So, they kind of always knew that, but there was a little more attached than just that going into this thing and what led to the suspension. So they're still going to be waiting, I think, until the end of the first semester. Now, that's not 100%, but I feel pretty confident saying it.
You know how pumped Rick is for the season? On his way here today, he drove to Xavier.
It's not pumped, it's autopilot, because I've been there every day.
I was just blindly...
Just got an autopilot, it was before 10 a.m., zero caffeine in my body.
Were you on campus?
No, I was literally like 10 feet from the exit before I go, what am I doing? Where am I going? And
holy
then I had to
cow.
Loop it around.
So you guys shared that one, that's great.
He's going to go to Cintas at 10 o'clock this morning.
And just sit there.
Yeah.
And just sit there
just
soaking
up. Just get ready for the game, talk to Tom Iser maybe.
Probably could have caught shoot around.
Yeah. Yeah, probably would have made it in time.
Put the blob uniform on just because?
Yeah.
That stinky, smelly, god-awful thing.
Do a few push-ups in the blob uniform.
Been good.
Yeah.
Good for you. Maybe you will be the blob this year at some point.
I was pretty close about a year ago.
No, I do have a question for you. They announced that they're doing more premium seating on the floor.
Yeah.
You're, like, in the last absolute spot down there.
What are you talking about? Xavier Scout Site is the only place that covers Xavier on a daily basis.
I know, but I mean, are they squeezing out even more of those media chairs? How are they?
I will never be misplaced. I am in between
right now,
Byron and Joe and TV. There's no room for anyone to fit in there. They've crammed me in because Byron enjoys saying things to me in between timeouts. So I'm not going anywhere. I'm not worried about it at all.
So Rick Berger's seat is not in.
People keep asking me that, and I'm like, I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned.
But you'll be the only media member there?
Next year, there's going to be like 15 more seats that disappear, or 15 new premium seats on the floor. I'm not worried about it at all.
You'll be covered up in the club upstairs, maybe up in the rafters all the way,
dropping down
Skyline gift cards out of the...
No, if they do that, put me up in D'Artagnan's deck. Stand up,
I like that.
Drink a few craft beers during the game. I'll be ready to go by post-game interviews.
Your stuff won't read very well, but you'll be ready to go.
It won't read any different than usual.
Sobriety or not.
Sure, I heard our podcast. We were stone cold sober on Wednesday night, and it
didn't work.
Awful.
Well, it happens.
Yeah.
It happens. All right, what can you tell us about tonight's opponent, Lehigh?
Well, they're not bad on offense. Tim Kempton, their big guy, is the reigning two-time player of the year in the Patriot League. His dad was an NBA player.
Played Notre Dame, I believe.
Right, and on that note, Pete Gillen recruited him to Notre Dame for Digger Phelps when he was there.
Exactly.
So kind of a interesting full circle thing there. 17.7 points, 9.5 boards last year. Great feat. Loves to spin, loves to pump fake you, get you off your balance, and then go into you and draw contact. He's kind of an old school, slow, patient game.
Basically, could have helped Xavier inside this year.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be a good test for Xavier's big man, because obviously they struggled against Ferris State. They're the big unknown. So stopping him and then scoring on him will be a big key for Xavier. The thing I'll say is he's not a shot blocker at all, so Xavier has to go right through his chest and try to get him in foul trouble. I'll be interested to see that. Then the other thing is Karan Ross, their point guard. He's going to be the career leader, school's career leader in assists, like 10 games into the season. He's only a junior this year. He reminds me a lot of how Creighton uses Mo Watson. They'll set a high ball screen for him at midcourt. They'll set it on the wing. They'll set the double ball screen and give him a choice of which side he wants to come off of. They basically just put him in a position to make a play. He's super quick, super crafty. He can pass. He can shoot it off the dribble. He can get all the way to the rim and score. He draws contact. He's a really nice player. And that, with that, the toughest thing for Xavier in their defense when they're learning is how to defend that ball screen.
It's for everybody.
And so they're going to test Sean O'Mara and Rasheed Gaston all night, I would assume.
Especially, yeah, if they don't move their feet very well at all, and that could be a tough thing. Comfortable win?
I think Xavier wins by more than 15, if I had to guess. I watched the Virginia game from last year. They played Virginia in the non-conference, and I watched that last night because Virginia plays the pack line man-to-man, same as Xavier.
Did they get out of the 30s?
Well, yes, yeah. I mean, it was high scoring for Virginia. Virginia had no problem scoring against them.
Then.
Yeah,
big game for them.
Yeah, they actually won 80-54. So,
that's a big scoring day for them.
Yeah, and I think the pack line defense did give them some trouble by sort of corralling that, what they like to do with their ball screens, high ball screens for Ross. So I think Xavier will do a good job defensively and sort of be able to limit them. And then on the other side, if they're playing with any type of pace, Xavier will put up plenty of points.
All right, before we get out of here, I do want to talk a little bit of recruiting because there were some signings for programs this week. Let's start with you, Chad, what UC did signing-wise and where they stand in recruiting.
They signed two. They've got another one that's coming Sunday. His parents were working this week, so he couldn't sign his letter of intent until Sunday. Trevor Moore, big-time shooter, kid from Houston, Texas. He's now at South Kent in Connecticut playing a prep year for his senior year. Just a kid that can really, really shoot the basketball.
Playing prep year for his senior year or prep year after?
Senior year.
Okay, for senior year.
Yeah, he's another one of those. He's like Troy. He's young. Troy Copain's not going to turn 21 until next week, and he's a senior in college. So Trevor's kind of like that, a little bit younger kid. But if you leave him open, it's going in. And then they signed Aleo Nsami.
I was hoping you were going to pronounce it. I didn't want to try to pronounce it.
6'9".
You didn't sound very confident in that. You good with
it? Chan's a Congo expert, pronunciation expert.
Yeah, he's from the Congo. Mick was joking on Monday that up until 18 months ago, he had never played basketball inside.
Joking, but serious?
But serious, okay. Yeah. Never played basketball inside. Had never played basketball with shoes on.
Holy cow.
It's a kid that's really come a long way in a short period of time. I wouldn't be surprised, because they return all five of their bigs next year, to see him redshirt. He's only about 190, 195 pounds right now, but incredibly long. Really, really good shot blocker, really good on the glass, and he plays 100 miles an hour.
And if you do that, it gives you a year of him literally playing some real organized basketball, at least, in his practice settings and skill settings and all that stuff. And so it is not a bad thing if that happens.
Three square meals a day
and
full weight program, and they get him up around 230, 240. I mean, he could really be a factor for him down the road. The kid signing on Sunday is my favorite kid in the class, Keith Williams, 6'5" wing out of New York City. Plays at Bishop Laughlin. There's a lot of people that think that he's got a really good chance to be the player of the year in New York City this year.
Pretty good.
Big-time scorer, slasher, can shoot it, defender, kind of a jack-of-all-trades wing that I think really would fit well in this roster.
All right. For Xavier, four signed, correct?
Five. Yeah, and it's ranked top five in the class currently. Obviously, UK is just getting things rolling, so you'll at least have someone jump in front of you, if not a few more schools here.
I meant to ask Jeff Drummond that when we had him on. Cal was asked that, I think, yesterday or day before one of the press conferences. How's recruiting going? Good. It's all just good. He didn't want to go any further than that.
I mean, what else could it be going for Cal?
Correct.
I love P.J. Washington.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Nick Richards is really good, too.
Yeah, I like Nick Richards a lot, but I love P.J. Washington.
Yeah. For Xavier, the big headliners, you've got two top 40 guys in the same class. Paul Scruggs, ranked 31, 6'3", 6'4", guard that's just elite defensively with a 6'10 wingspan. Plays as hard as anyone in the class. Just an incredible motor.
Yeah, that's crazy. Think about that for a 6'10 wingspan and a 6'3", 6'4".
Crazy. It's crazy. It's funny because you always wondered, like, when you watched him, it's like, he doesn't look that big, but how does he rebound so well, defend so well, get into the lane so easily, like, all the time? And then you find out he has a 6'10 wingspan, you go, that's why. Because he's really like a 6'8 guard,
right?
Essentially,
yeah.
I mean, in his measurables. And he plays so hard. And then the other one, Najee Marshall, ranked 39, a 6'6 do-it-all wing, really defends well, really passes well, really gets in the lane well. A kid that I'd seen for the first time this spring and immediately loved him. Chris Mack felt the same way. Saw him one time, was like, that's the priority. We've got to get him. Mike Pegues is assistant coach for Xavier. I did a podcast with the assistant coach talking about signing day. And Mike Pegues said, Matt came to me and was like, that guy's Magic Johnson. We've got to get him now. And Mike was like, okay, thanks, coach. No pressure on that. I've got to land Magic Johnson now. Thanks. Those two guys are really the headliners. And then after that, you have a 6'5", 6'6 wing and Elias Harden, who's bucket getter, a great mid-range. Jamie loves the pump fake on the three on a bad closeout, take two dribbles and hit the mid-range 15-footer. So you would love him, Skinny.
That's my guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Making college basketball great again with the mid-range. and then you got Jared Ritter, who is a 6'7 Brad Redford, is what they're hoping. Spot-up shooter, an elite shooter, and a big man who's a little bit of a project, Contravius Jones, 6'10". He was like 320 pounds when they started recruiting him. He's down to about 280 now and continues to slim down. So a guy with some upside that they're excited about. Really good hands, good feel.
I mean, almost every program that isn't – isn't Kentucky for the most part. When you're getting bigs, it is a project. I mean, a lot of the good bigs are one and done guys anyway. So those are not a bad.
It's a terrible class for big men.
And the thing is, you either get at that if he's not a project, if he's athletic, big, and skilled, he's going to Kentucky or Duke.
Right.
And if he's not, then he's either raw and athletic
or just horrible
and can't score, or he can score a little bit and has some feel, but he needs to get in shape. Yeah, I mean, so, it's kind of what you're going to end up with. And this guy's a little more under the radar than some of the other ones, but Xavier's done a really good job of recognizing those type of guys and then turning them into players.
Yeah. No doubt.
I mean, that's why you have Mike Cadiz.
And that's a big part of it, too. I mean, you always hear that as a project, and some of them don't work. But a lot of it comes down to, can you develop those guys? And if you have a staff that's got a track record of doing that, then absolutely take the project on, and chances are pretty good you'll win out of it.
And Chris Mack feels really confident about developing the big men because of the job Mike Big East has done since he's gotten here.
Question for you. With Quentin Gooden, who I like a lot, and Najee and Paul Scruggs, those going forward are going to be your three main, you would think, perimeter guys.
Yeah.
How much of a change is this for Mac? Because those three guys aren't shooters like they've had the past couple of years. They're going to be incredible defensively with this group, but they're not going to be able to stretch the floor like they have.
No, it's going to be different, and that's it's interesting on offense because, like you said, they're going to be elite defensively all of a sudden, I think. And the past 2 years, they've had elite offensive guys that they've been trying to kind of hide on the defense end. Now they have guys that can play offense really well. They're elite defensively, but you don't have that same rhythm because you have three guards you can stretch the floor. That's why I think, one, the development of Kaiser Gates is going to be really important because he's a four-man who maybe could even play the five down the road in like a small ball depth type lineup who can stretch the floor. Jared Ritter in this class, you don't know that he's going to be good enough to see time, but if he ends up being, he's obviously another guy who's 6'7 and can really shoot. And then Elias Harden becomes extremely important to this group because he's a guy with the potential to fill it up from the outside. He needs to improve. He needs to get bigger and stronger. But if he's a guy that's ready to contribute early on in his career, then all of a sudden you could have something really, really special.
Yeah, it just seems to me those three are going to be the three that are going to be on the floor, and I don't see any of them as a guy that really stretches the floor.
Not at all, and it changes your offense. You all of a sudden, that ball screen motion offense you've looked like that looks closer to like the Golden State Warriors the past 2 years is going to look a lot more like the Mark Lyons to Holloway ball screen offense where you're trying to get in the lane, get box touches, and
look like
kick time, out.
Elite defensively.
Except a whole heck of a lot more talented on offense. Those guys, those guys may not be shooters, but they're still a lot better scorers than Troy Copain and Kevin Johnson.
There you go. I always wait for that moment that I just like you guys go back and forth.
That's a fact. That's not debatable.
That was respect.
Don't on Chad today. He's bringing up good points.
I was just waiting for a retort of some kind. He just had to shut it down over there.
No, I mean, I'm genuinely curious about that because it's a drastic change in the way the roster is constructed.
It's very different, but again, you're talking about top 40 players. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like guys who can't score. It's guys who don't shoot it well. So,
right. I'm not.
Yeah, you're right. You're dead on. It's going to change, and it'll be interesting. Like, Chris Mack and Travis Steele have been really good about molding that offense around these shooters. Now, did they mold it back just as easily?
Yeah, and I mean, that's sometimes what you got to do.
Or do you have enough shooting? You know, because like we talked about, Elias Harden has that great mid-range game. Now all of a sudden you have a bunch of guys who can get in the lane. He's going to get a lot of bad closeouts, which is what he excels at. Yeah. So maybe does it work perfectly with his game and it doesn't matter.
He'll be my guy.
Yeah, he will be your guy.
My kind of guy.
Trevor Moore doesn't do the mid-range. He does the pump fake.
Get to the rim.
One dribble, relocate to the three-point
line. Oh, okay.
The Clay Thompson.
Step back?
Yeah, Clay Thompson.
The Clay Thompson where he pump fakes to close out.
You step to the foul line, and you somehow step all the way back to the three-point line.
He doesn't leave the three-point line. He pump fakes, one dribble, relocate, back.
And fire.
Yeah.
That's not easy to do, actually.
No, it's really tough, and he hits a lot of them.
That's awesome. All right, any closing shots, boys?
Let me get this from you. I want to know, because we did this the other night. We did the win-loss game. I'm not going to ask you to go through each game. But final record, do you have any type of picks? How many losses is this team, UC team going to have?
I'm thinking 25-6, somewhere in that range. Okay. I think probably two in the non-conference. And it's going to be difficult for them because everything's away from home except for that Xavier game. The Butler and Iowa State are both on the road. Rhode Island, and then either Penn State or Duke are in the Hall of Fame tip-off.
On
neutral floor. And then Rhode Island, that place is like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's not very far.
Campus.
Right.
So that's going to be kind of a home game for Rhode Island. So I think 2-3 losses in the regular season and probably three in the American Conference, three or four. So I 25-6 sounds about right to me.
And then what about Xavier? Any thoughts there?
I haven't really gone completely through their out-of-conference. I'm wondering if they struggle maybe a little bit in the early part of the season to get those big guys up to speed. I think,
or make a choice to go in a different direction,
or to wait for Kaiser to get back.
They're going to have to figure things out either way.
Yeah. You know, I probably 26, 27 wins regular season, I would think, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's more like 24 or 25 if it takes them a little bit longer. Here's where Chris does a great job. He it's like the Bob Huggins school of scheduling.
Yeah, theirs looks better than UC's did, but the RPI always seemed to work itself out.
It's not they're playing good, like high major opponents that are good for the RPI, but they're not playing Duke and Kansas
in neutral or on a better place. Right.
So they do a great job of playing the RPI and manipulating the RPI game in the out of conference.
Mario's the best in the country at that. I mean, he does a great job of finding like that team, that bye game that's going to like win their conference and really boost your RPI.
Right.
Yeah. That you can still beat.
He
was genius because you look at the non conference and I go, well, that's not very good. It's not going to work itself out. And then all of a sudden you look up and go, wait a minute, their RPI is pretty doggone good for what they've done.
And that's how you build a power in a Conference USA or an Atlantic 10. Right. And then Xavier's just kind of taken that with them to the East and then tweaked it a little bit, turned it down a notch just because
you know what you're going to get.
Because you're going to lose a few more games
because
in conference.
Now you're playing Missouri instead of playing, you know, one of the better ACC teams.
Yeah.
You know, and you're keeping that level of competition up in that RPI game you're manipulating, but you're not taking your, you know, everybody wanted to know when UC was in the Big East why their out of conference schedule sucked. It's because there's 13 ranked opponents.
Once you got in the league, every night was going to be an RPI boost.
Yeah.
You know, win, lose, or draw, you're going to get some level of RPI boost out of it.
They don't have that same level in the Big East now, but still, there's 7 or 8 teams that are going to be top 100 in the RPI.
You're just going to lose a few more games. So I had Xavier 26-5 was my final. I had him 11-2 in non-conference, 15-3 in conference.
Who are the two you tab in non-league?
A loss in the Orlando tournament. I think the second game to Clemson they probably lose, especially with the short bench if Kaiser is not ready to go. And then I think they lose at Colorado. They probably split at Baylor, at Colorado. Yeah. I expect them to lose at Colorado. And then I have them losing at Nova, at Creighton, and probably at Seton Hall in conference play. They never seem to play well at Seton Hall.
Right.
And then for UC, I had them 23-8 or 22-9 based off of going through their schedule last night. So
how many in the league?
I don't remember what the actual breakdown was there. I didn't note it, but it was, yeah. I mean, they're obviously going to do pretty well in conference play. The problem with conference play there is, though, when you start looking at, like, where might they slip up, it's like, that's not a great loss to take. You know, like, it's like they can't be perfect. They're not going to win every game. And then when you start thinking about losses they might take, it's like, that stinks. That would turn.
You guys went through Miami's schedule and determined what they were
going to
do,
probably? I ran out of time last night.
You know what? Just too tough to call. It really
is. A win. I'm already going to project ahead. They will beat this game.
Shout out to Coach Cooper.
Shout out to your 5-23 final season, Coach.
Big announcement at Bearcat Journal.
Yeah. I was going to actually touch on what you guys got up on the website, but you got a big announcement as far as a staff addition.
Kashmir Wright, former Cincinnati point guard, has joined the staff at Bearcat Journal.
You know what you're going to do now? Here's what you're going to do with Bearcat Journal. I can see it coming. You're going to now put yourself together like a little trailing basketball team that's going to go around emotionally, play different places, and now that's why he's got Kashmir Wright. He's signing his point guard.
Not the worst idea I've ever heard before.
Cash joined us on the podcast last night. He did a little season preview that I put up today. So excited, really excited to have him on board.
And I didn't know. I asked you. I said, "How's he doing? What's up with him?" Tell people they don't know.
Unfortunately, he tore the same ACL that he tore at UC 8 years to the day.
Wow.
8 years to the day.
Not cool.
No. He said his mom told him, kind of a sign it was time.
Is he going to have surgery on it?
He said now, you know, he can walk on it and run on it, and said he can play, you know, not competitive basketball.
You're going to need him on your club, man.
No, he said he can play a little bit on with the tears. He had gotten his legs so strong that he's all right with it. But professional career is over. He's on his way, but he'll be back in Cincinnati on Monday from over in Holland and covering the Bearcats for us. So I'm
very, cool.
Very happy and excited about that.
What else you got up on the website as well?
Like I said, we just put the season preview podcast up. We've got some good stuff on the basketball team, the football side. Not the happiest place in the world right now, but they still have three games left. So Central Florida tomorrow at noon.
I heard Tommy Tuberville on his show last night. He said it's pretty good. So that's a good thing.
Can you say the program's in a better spot now than it was 4 years ago in that voice?
I like to say program's in a better spot than it was 4 years ago, boys.
Chipotle! Montgomery and Barbecue. Chipotle!
My friend Jim Bob Billy, all y'all.
One time for old time's sake, fudge cakes.
I like fudge cake. I like to eat it every day.
The old Mike Brown gag.
Pumpkin.
It's been a while since we've done the Mike Brown gag.
I know. We'll have to pull that out a few more times. I'm not going to tell it to kick around too much longer, I don't think.
No,
you got to argue.
A lot of signing day stuff. Obviously, that was big for Xavier on Wednesday. We have like 200 hours worth of podcasting up on the site this week.
It's crazy.
Matchup Xavier versus Lehigh, most detailed breakdown you'll find. I watched a lot of film on Lehigh last night, so go check all that out.
There you go. I didn't come here to retire. I just want y'all to know that, too. Stage one. All right, folks, I appreciate the time as always. We'll be back on Monday. I'm going to be calling it New York, or at least Newark, or somewhere close to that.
Chipotle.
The big city. Peace. I like big city. Have a good one. We'll be back on Monday right here on localswell.com.